through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Welcome to Tom, Stacy, a Tuesday edition for... Got a great show planned coming up at 12:30. His partner, Brock Heward, will be joining us at 1 o'clock today. And we're going to be going down memory lane a little bit because there's a question that we've been asking about Russell Wilson over and over and over again that I think we might be able to answer if we just go back a little bit to before the time when he was even here. So, guys, without further ado, this is Peter King of the Monday Morning Quarterback podcast. Now, first of all, do both of you remember a time before Russell Wilson was here when Pete Carroll was strongly considering, and not even considering, where he was going hard after Peyton Manning? Jake, you remember that?
Absolutely, I remember. I was stoked. I was so excited about that possibility of having one of my all-time favorite quarterbacks potentially be a Seahawk. How could I not remember that?
Yeah, I mean, there was some trepidation about his injury. I think he had like a neck fusion or so. But Stacy, if you didn't have a quarterback, because the Seahawks really didn't at the time, Hasselbeck was going to be out on his way out the door, and you had a chance to land a Hall of Fame quarterback, what would you have thought?
Oh, of course. You go after that Hall of Famer. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I think, if I remember right, I think everybody was pretty much on that bus. Although, I don't really remember anybody thinking that they had a legitimate shot to get him. I remember it always being that he was going to go to, I mean, Denver was definitely up there, and there were maybe one or two other teams. Oh, Tennessee. That was a big one. Everybody thought he was going to go to Tennessee because there was a rumor that he was going to be offered like a share of the team after he retired or something like that. So they were definitely high on the list. But the Seahawks were in the mix for that. This is Peter King just mentioning that. Cut one, Curtis.
Peyton had it in his mind, the teams that he was really interested in. And some of the teams that wanted to get involved, the Seattle Seahawks in 2012, a month after Peyton Manning signed, drafted Russell Wilson in the third round. And clearly he's a Pro Bowl top 10 NFL quarterback. If they had signed Peyton Manning, they would not have gone after Russell Wilson. So that's one little X factor here.
See, I'm not sure I agree with that. Unless Peter King was told that directly by Schneider, like, we wouldn't have gone after him. Because what's to stop the Seahawks from getting Peyton Manning and then drafting this quarterback in the third round for the future? I mean, do you guys think that had they signed Peyton Manning, that would have precluded them from drafting Russell Wilson? What do you think, Stacey?
No, I think they still go for Wilson. I think that this is a team where if they see someone they want and they like, they go for him. Like, I still buy into that theory, that rumor that was out for a while there, that if Patrick Mahomes would have been there and somehow available, they would have gone for him. I think they absolutely draft who they want, who they like, sometimes regardless of need. So, yeah, I could see Wilson still being on this roster.
Yeah, I could still see it. Now, the timeline of it all, in terms of when they decided to sign Matt Flynn, I'm not quite sure exactly when that happened. If Matt Flynn,
March of 2012, Brock and I were in Dublin. I remember it clear as day.
So it was in reaction to after Pete Carroll had a failed attempt of recruiting Peyton Manning. And if that's the case,
sure, yeah.
If that's the case, then yes, I agree with Stacy that I do think that they, knowing the Seahawks, they don't just look at needs and positions. They look at the best player available at different spots and how can that player help their current roster or their position group. Mm-hmm. I think that Russell Wilson would have been a guy that they identified that in the third round that they really liked, that they thought, hey, could be the guy of the future and learn and not have to come in right away year one, year two, year three, even and really compete for a starting job, that he could really sit back and learn from Peyton Manning. So, yeah, I think Russell Wilson still would have been a Seahawk when it's all said and done.
I think so, too, especially given the fact that Peyton Manning was, even though he still had good years left, he was definitely on the back nine of his career. He was probably like on the 16th hole at that point. So even had the Seahawks, see, this is the problem that Denver ran into, right? They had Peyton Manning, they won the Super Bowl, got to another one, but then they drafted all these other quarterbacks. None of them worked out. They knew that they had to plan for the future and it just didn't work. If John Schneider had gotten Peyton Manning and they drafted Russell Wilson, they would have been set for sure. Cut two here. This is how it actually went down, explaining why Peyton didn't end up here.
One of his really good friends was a guy named Brandon Stokely. He was a wide receiver, played with Peyton in Indianapolis for a while, and then he played in Denver. And so Brandon Stokely was living in Denver at the time, and basically Manning stayed with Stokely when he had visited the Broncos on this trip. And when he visited the Broncos on this trip, the Seattle Seahawks and Pete Carroll flew to the airport right near the Broncos facility, even though Manning said he really didn't want them to do that. And Manning didn't go meet Pete Carroll. You know, he ended up, Pete Carroll flew to Denver chasing Peyton Manning, and Manning never met with him. He got back on the plane and just flew back to Seattle.
So Peyton Manning expressly warned the Seahawks, don't fly here. It's kind of like one of those things where it's, don't call me, I'll call you. Doesn't sound to me like Peyton had any real interest in coming to the Seahawks at all, but Pete flew down here anyway, and Peyton just refused to meet with him. My question is this, or I guess there's a couple things we want to explore with this, and we'll do it throughout the day. We'll definitely ask Mike and Brock about it. But had Peyton come here, had Peyton been a Seahawk, how much would that have changed the organization? And we're talking from offensive philosophy to, you know, their quarterback situation going forward. Would they have won a Super Bowl? Where would that have left them going forward into 2019? I mean, there's all kinds of different tentacles to this. The one that I'm most interested in, though, is this one. Because in 2011, 2012, Pete Carroll was desperate for a quarterback. Clearly, he was willing to fly 1,000 miles to go meet a quarterback who didn't want to meet him. So if by some miracle they were able to get Peyton Manning, would Pete Carroll have tailored the offense around him and made it a throwing offense in the way that he's not willing to do for the quarterback who's here right now, Russell Wilson? I think that's a really interesting comparison, because but a lot of people want this offense to be tailored around Russell Wilson. And why not? He's your best player. But Pete Carroll won't do it, and there's reasons for that. But I think he definitely would have done that for Peyton Manning had he been here. And in my opinion, today, Russell Wilson is a better quarterback than Peyton Manning was in 2012. So what do you guys think about that? Do you think, Stacey, that Pete would have been willing to adjust for Peyton?
Yes, because I think there would have been pressure from above Carroll to adjust for Peyton Manning. I think any team that were to land Peyton Manning understood it was, at the time, like winning the lottery. He was the top free agent. There were all these teams vying for him. He was obviously going to be not just a future Hall of Famer, but someone that could alter your franchise. I think that, I would imagine, Paul Allen would have said, hey, we landed Peyton Manning. We're making this work for Peyton Manning. I think that when you have a quarterback that's so well established, who comes into your program, he has more power than when you draft a rookie. I mean, I think that if the Seahawks didn't have Russell Wilson and somehow traded for him now, I wonder if they would alter their program a little bit to fit Russell Wilson, because he has more power and more a bigger reputation now at age, what is he, turning 31 or 32 than he did, you know, when he was first a rookie. So I think that just comes with the territory of being a very well-established quarterback.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you guys. I don't think Pete Carroll tailors his offense around for Peyton Manning. I think that he may give some concessions here or there to Peyton Manning, who, remember, his nickname was the Sheriff, and everywhere he went, he ran the show. He ran practice. He ran the offense. And the reason why Pete Carroll wanted to go after Peyton Manning, well, why wouldn't you want to go after a future Hall of Famer, a guy who pretty much was a member of the Hall of Fame walking and gracing the football field at that point in time in his career? But you got to remember, before Russell Wilson and before Pete Carroll had Wilson, that mobile quarterback, his entire career he had drop-back passers. He had Carson Palmer at USC and Matt Leinart, and you know, the list goes on. Mark Sanchez. You know, there's certain guys that he was used to playing with a certain style of quarterback. And Peyton Manning, at that point in time in his career, I believe that Pete Carroll, under his evaluation, would have been perfect for his system. He would have been the ultimate game manager in Pete Carroll's eyes because he could run the show, he could run the operation, but he was not physically dominant. As you said, Tom, you thought he was on the, you know, you thought he was on the 16th hole of his career. And so he's not going to be asked to do the same things that he was asked early in his career. Hand the ball off to Marshawn Lynch, be effective in the play action game.
I think I overstated that, Jake. His numbers got better after he went to Denver. Like that last year when he won the Super Bowl, they went way down. But before that, his numbers in Denver were as good, if not better, than they were in Indy for a couple of years. In 2011, 12, 13, he was still an air-it-out quarterback. I mean, I'm not so sure that you could have gotten Peyton Manning to agree to Pete Carroll's turn. And as far as like the USC thing, they had drop-back passes, but they also had great running backs.
But Tom, that's why he told Pete Carroll, don't come to Denver. I am not going to play in your system. So, Pete Carroll is not going, he's not going to tailor or change his system because as we sit right now in 2019 or 2020, after the 2019 season, we are still talking about the same things. Pete Carroll chooses his philosophy over the strength of his personnel. And I think that that's
so why did he bother to go down to the airport
then? Like I said, you got a Hall of Fame quarterback. He wanted Peyton Manning. He wanted Peyton Manning to run his philosophy, his show at quarterback. And you know, you want one of the best quarterbacks in the game. You're competing or you're not. And if Pete Carroll could have sold him on that vision, I think it was worth a tremendous shot to Carroll.
I do think it's a really interesting point by Jake, because what he's saying is, in part, I mean, you're also saying this applies to Carroll today, but part of what I'm hearing from your argument is, I still think Pete Carroll would have had pressure to change. Peyton Manning clearly didn't think he would. And of all people involved in this situation, it's pretty telling that Peyton Manning seemed to think Seattle would be not the right fit for him, presumably because Carroll wouldn't adapt that philosophy.
I just want to get this straight. You think that Pete Carroll flew down to Denver essentially uninvited to tell Pete Carroll or to tell Peyton Manning that he should join the Seahawks because you're going to fit my system and we're not going to let you, the Hall of Fame quarterback, do what you want to do?
Yeah, that we're going to build something special here, that I've got a great philosophy. We're building a great roster with young talent, and you can be a great piece to it, but you're not going to be the show. And that's why, you know, Peyton Manning, when it was all said and done, didn't even want to hear the pitch because it wasn't going to be a fit for him.
So if Peyton Manning said to Pete Carroll, hey, look, Pete, I want to be a Seahawk. I love you. I love Seattle. But I'm not tailoring my offense around what you want to do. I want to throw the ball all over the place. I don't care if you have a running back or not. You don't think that Pete would have said yes to him?
I think that it would have been a tremendous conversation, but I think Pete Carroll would have been at war with himself. And when we know, if we know Pete Carroll and everything that he's been through, he decided that moment after the Patriots and everything that he built through USC that his mantra was going to be, I'm never going to change. I'm going to stick to what I know and what I believe in and what my convictions are. And because of that philosophy, he's had a tremendous amount of success here in Seattle. But I also think that that's the reason also that it would not have been a fit for Peyton Manning here in Seattle, because Pete did not want to relinquish, you know, the control to a guy like Peyton Manning, in the sense that it is all going to be run through Peyton Manning. I don't think that Pete would have done that.
I think for a quarter, for a coach trying to get back in the NFL who was unestablished at that point, I think he would have thought about making some sacrifices. We'll ask Brock Huard and Mike Salk about this more coming up at 12:30 and 1. Right now, I got three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
This hour, by the way, is brought to you by Car Toys. Do you guys think that viewership records will be set once sports return to the airwaves, the big sports, baseball, college football, etc.? What do you think, Jake?
I do. I do think when you talk about the big sports, yes. I think, you know, we've talked about this before in terms of revenue lost and gain. I still really believe that even if the NFL wasn't able to sell out their stadiums, let's say they only able to sell, you know, 20% capacity of their stadiums, 40%. I still think that they do just fine because I really believe that their viewership is going to be higher than it's ever been before. Same with the NBA, same with college basketball. I think everybody just has a unique and different appreciation for being able to watch games. I mean, won't you guys be fired up to have live games on again? Games
God,
that were
yes.
a huge part of your life? I mean,
absolutely.
Crazy.
Yes, absolutely. I would be shocked if we didn't see record ratings for things. I mean, we've already seen record ratings for programs outside of just sports. I've never heard a show like Tiger King talked about as much as it is on sports radio. I mean, among athletes, like everyone is watching the same things right now because there is nothing else. Imagine when there's finally a game.
A game. Like one baseball game. The whole world's
just
watching.
Just a single game.
I'll be watching
I would
it.
Watch any game right now. Any game. Little League. I'm all over it.
I missed the Little League. You know what? I like the Little League World Series. And that's usually, what does that come up in August? They probably won't do it, but I like the Little League World Series. All right. Question two.
Number 2.
All right, Jake, I tailored this question specifically for you because Stacey and I were talking about it a little bit before. Is there a more uneasy relationship between any two athletes than a quarterback and his backup? This comes from the whole Aaron Rodgers, Jordan Love thing. Like, right now it's Jordan Love's job to help out Aaron Rodgers, even though both of them know what the deal is.
Yeah, typically it isn't that way, though. Typically, it's actually a very good relationship because more often than not, you have an established starter and you have a backup quarterback whose job is to support the starter. And that's typically what's known in the NFL. So oftentimes you're going to see your starter and your backup actually have a very, very close relationship. Now, in this unique situation with Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love, Mitchell Trubisky and Nick Foles, you look at some of these scenarios around the league, they're not necessarily going to be as friendly because there is a strong nature by both players and understanding that it's anybody's game, right? Tyrod Taylor and Justin Herbert, they can still have a very good, strong relationship because everybody knows what the situation's going to be. One, Taylor is a great human being, a great individual. He's been a backup in the league for quite a while. He's been a very successful starter, but he understands that ultimately his job is to be a placeholder for Justin Herbert. So there's certain scenarios in the league that I think foster really good quarterback rooms and culture. And then there's some other ones where it is very, very dicey and honestly awkward every single day you walk into that room.
Yeah, I mean, it's curious. I was curious also, just like Tom, to hear the perspective of someone who's been in that room. My first thought was actually that I couldn't think of an example on the spot, but I was like, there has to be a different example, better example than quarterback, because in so many quarterback rooms, the gap between the starter and the backup is so large that if I'm like Drew Brees, I'm not that worried about it. But I guess that's not the case everywhere. I mean, what I'm curious is, like, what's the relationship like between Gardner Minshew and Mike Glennon right now, right? I mean, he's a veteran, but he's also kind of like a perennial backup. You're pretty confident you could start, but then you also haven't established yourself as a starter. That's fascinating to me.
it's all based off personalities, right? I mean, are you an abrasive, arrogant personality when you walk into the door? Or are you, you know, a friendly guy? Are you accepting? You know, those are, I think all those things factor in when you talk about a Gardner Minshew, Mike Glennon situation. But also, that relationship's probably not going to be as close as others because, again, you're competing at a high level against one another. And also, if you're Gardner Minshew, you know Mike Glennon isn't going to be there. He's not going to be your backup. Let's say Gardner Minshew tears it up and they invest in their future. Mike Glennon isn't going to be his backup over the next, you know, 3-4 years. So there's a difference in terms of that relationship.
Question three.
Number three.
I'm asking this question based on two possible events. One, that John Schneider had serious interest in Patrick Mahomes, and two, that John Schneider may have been seriously interested in trading Russell Wilson to the Browns for the first number one overall pick. Okay, so I think the excuse that's typically made for John Schneider in this situation is he's doing his due diligence, right? He's always following up on all options just to make sure there isn't something better out there. Well, you guys think it's possible that a GM could go too far in looking at other options? Don't you think that at some point it's a good idea to commit to one thing and not always be looking at where the grass is greener? Stacey, what do you think?
You know, I think that as a GM, it's your prerogative to explore all options. I think if you're a good GM, you're constantly looking at all options. The trick is, if I'm a GM, I never want any of my players to know I was looking at these options. I don't want my quarterback to find out that I was exploring a trade. I don't want my linebacker to find out I went to someone else's pro day. I mean, it's totally fair to be looking at these things, right? Like, if you're... You don't make it that high without being kind of a cutthroat person, a business-oriented person, someone who knows the value of players, knows when to trade, when to acquire someone. But, I mean, ideally, they don't find out you were doing this.
That is for sure, because once it gets out, then it becomes a topic of conversation that you don't want any part of, right? And I think the Seahawks, in their unique run, because they had success, those conversations had happened all the time because they were revolving around Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman, Russell Wilson, Marshawn Lynch. You know, they just were all over the board in that circumstance. But when you specifically talk about certain players, yeah, I think it can lead to a strained relationship. I think it can lead to one side being leery of the other but ultimately, I think a lot of those conversations, it's a wake up call that it is a business. As much as you have a relationship and a love with a certain franchise or a fan base, things of that nature, both the player and the organization have to do what's right for themselves in terms of the business. And
you know,
I think
what
that,
though, to
know,
me, part of that business, part of running a good business, though, is establishing trust amongst the people in your business and letting them know, like, hey, once I commit to you, you're my guy. You know, it's not like, hey, just because it's a business, I can run around and do whatever I want and make all my employees uneasy. If I've got a quarterback that I like or that I love, what am I doing fishing around looking at other guys? Just stick with one guy.
You're
it's
just
like,
looking.
Honey, yeah, I was out with this girl the other night. I didn't think you'd find out about it, though. So, you know, it's okay.
No. No, that's not what it is. It's making yourself – and you let other GMs know that you are willing to hear trades. If other GMs think that at any point maybe any player's on the table, he's going to be willing to approach me with a trade and approach me with an idea.
But you can always call him up.
Nah, that's how you establish those relationships, man. I added the man there to be casual.
It's also the interesting part. You know, you look at Russell Wilson. It's happened both times in the contract discussions, right? Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes. You talk about the conversations that have happened around this quarterback. I think it's pretty interesting. You have an organization that is constantly looking, constantly searching, constantly, trying to make the move that no one else is thinking about. And so, yeah, I think sometimes you can get yourself into some, hot water at times.
I can't wait to ask Mike Sauk about this, and then Brock Huard coming up at 1. We'll do it next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
All right, we got Mike Sauk in studio today. Glad to have Mikey in studio. He's wearing his mask and everything. Very proud of him. Mike, we just covered a ton of ground in our last segment there, including we went back about 8 years to figure out what might have happened had Peyton Manning ended up the quarterback here. But I want to start with something else, because this rumor that John Schneider was entertaining trading Russell Wilson to the Browns for the number one pick, that's one rumor. The other rumor being that John Schneider had serious interest in Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. And might have been willing to replace Russell Wilson with him. Do you think that a GM can ever go too far in exploring other options, maybe at the expense of damaging trust?
Nope. I think John did exactly the right thing. Doesn't surprise me for a moment that he considered a trade with the Browns. Doesn't surprise me for a moment, nor really did it at the time that he was looking at Patrick Mahomes in that draft. Why? Because Russell Wilson's agent is a wild card. He is. Mark Rogers is not he's not Buzz Cook, he's not Tom Condon, he's not one of the typical NFL free agents. Brock said today on our podcast, which will come out tonight, that most NFL most NFL agents are deal makers. And Russell hired a deal breaker, a guy who was going to do things differently, like baseball agents do. And baseball agents aren't there to make deals and get stuff done. They're there to push and push and push and drive the market in a non-salary cap sport. And that's what Russell hired. So when you're John Schneider and you'd already dealt with Mark Rogers once and now you were dealing with him a second time, you didn't know whether Russell was going to sign. There were rumors coming out at the time that he wanted to go to New York, or he wanted to go to L.A. and he wanted to be a star, or maybe play baseball. So if you're John Schneider, and all of this was happening, and you didn't know whether or not you were going to be able to make a deal, and Mark Rogers is pushing for a fully guaranteed contract, something you simply could not agree to, you would have been irresponsible. You would not have been doing your job if you didn't explore every single possibility to determine what would be the safest and best way to make your franchise best. And I think he chose the right thing. You don't trade Russell Wilson. You find a way to get the deal done. You've got a franchise quarterback, and you have to do everything in your power to try to build around him. And I think they did the right thing. But if he hadn't explored those things, I'd say it's malpractice.
Yeah, it's interesting, Salk, because I've been one of those people that have said, yeah, I absolutely think that happened. And I believe full-heartedly that those things happened. And it doesn't mean that they did the right or wrong thing, but I think that they, in their nature, just go out and they try and constantly evaluate their team, how they can improve, how they can put themselves in the best position possible. And if you're talking about potentially trading your best piece, then that's what you have to do to be able to get yourself back to the
philosophy. But especially if you don't know that your piece is going to re-sign with you. There was a legitimate threat that Russell Wilson just didn't want to be here. Right? And so if you're John Schneider, that was a threat.
I don't know about that.
Oh, it was absolutely out there as the possibility. We talked about it. Does Russell want to go and be a New York Giant? Do Russell and Sierra want to move to L.A. full-time and be part of the cool swinging Hollywood scene? Those conversations were nonstop. But that
could have been all nonsense, Mike. That was just our chatter. I mean, how do we know that Russell didn't want to just be here all along?
We don't, but neither did John Schneider, and he's hearing the same nonsense that we are. And if you don't protect yourself against it, you're not doing your job. I think he did the right thing.
I think his intel's a little better than ours.
Maybe, but at the same time, those rumors still get to him, and they make their way out for a reason. Those rumors came from Mark Rogers and his camp looking for leverage, and as Mark is looking for leverage and for his client Russell Wilson, it is 100% John's responsibility to get as much leverage for his team as he can. And if this was part of that, then I fully support it. Now, the real question to me isn't what happened then. It's why is it coming out now? Because this doesn't seem like something that comes out from the Seahawks side. When John Schneider and the Seahawks leak things, it doesn't come through Chris Sims and Tim Hasselbeck. This, my guess, comes through Mark Rogers. And I say that mostly because of everybody sort of in the mix here. He's the one I trust the least. So I don't know why this is coming out now, But that, to me, is a much bigger source of intrigue than whether or not the Seahawks looked at a deal a few years ago. Of course they did. They had to. But why is it coming out now? That I don't understand.
Have you explored any kind of guesses with anyone? Because I feel like I saw Danny kind of hinting at it with a tweet that he thought it could be Rodgers, or at least not Seattle's camp, because it does nothing except for make Seattle look bad, almost throwing away this franchise-making quarterback. But I can't think of a reason. It's not like Russell Wilson's about to get a new deal. There's no incentive.
Well, hopefully, if you get a chance, you can listen to the podcast from today. It'll come out tonight at 7 o'clock, brockandsalk.com, or brockandsalkpodcast.com. But Howdy's got a theory on this that involves Pete Carroll trying to motivate Russ, which I think is bunk. I don't think it makes any sense. But, you know, that's his idea. I'm probably with Danny. This smells like Mark Rodgers, and I can't necessarily figure out why, other than that it sort of, I think he's kind of a bitter guy. I think he's bitter about the way things went. It seemed like he and Schneider never really got along throughout the process. And if he's trying to make the Seahawks and John Schneider look bad, maybe he, like me, is unhappy with everything the Seahawks have done this offseason and don't think they've done enough to put anything around Russell Wilson to try to do better this year. And now he's just trying to make them look bad. That wouldn't surprise me either.
I mean,
you mean
it wouldn't surprise me in that sense, but I can just tell you from being with Russell every day over the last little bit that this hasn't come from his side. Chris Sims came out, you know, it doubled down on this conversation and said, I threw this out last year and no one even mentioned it or talked about it. So I think that that's something to be interested about it. But I do agree that there is an interesting aspect about this dynamic, Salk, in terms of, you know, where Pete Carroll is at, where this offseason was, what did it signify, you know, all those different things. I think they're all very curious, but I will say this. If you are going to say that about Mark Rodgers, Mark isn't just a rogue agent, right? Like, he's not just somebody that goes and does things on his own. Him and Russell Wilson have a very strong, very close relationship. So I think it's very...
I see him as sort of the devil on Russell Wilson's right shoulder. Like, he's got two. He's got an angel. He's got a devil. And Mark Rodgers is sort of the devil on one of those shoulders. It's the only way I can kind of put together how I feel about Russ with how I feel about Rodgers.
You know what none of us are even exploring is the possibility that this didn't come from the Seahawks, nor did it come from Mark Rodgers.
That it comes from the Browns.
There's a good chance. No, I was going to say this came from Josh Allen saying, oh, you guys don't have faith in him? Well, guess what? The Seahawks were about to trade Russell Wilson for the chance to get him.
Yeah,
That's my conspiracy theory.
Hey, speaking of Josh Allen, why don't the Bills sign Cam Newton?
Well, I don't know. I mean, did they drop
Josh Allen? Their franchise.
But they're wrong. He stinks.
And if not,
why don't they sign Cam Newton? They'd be better tomorrow.
If he stinks, then why did the Seahawks want him, Mike?
I don't know.
Why did the Seahawks want him?
See, that's why I think someone's trying to make Schneider look bad. They're trying to make Schneider seem like he would have liked Josh Allen. Schneider's like, I didn't want Josh Allen. I wanted Patrick Mahomes. Get out of here.
See you, Mike.
See you, guys.
All right. Who are the players on this team who are the actual foundation that we're building around? We'll explore that next 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
I cannot wait to ask Brock Huer coming up in about 15 minutes here whether or not Pete would have been willing to change his philosophy for Peyton Manning, because Peyton Manning is one of Brock's guys, like a number one guy. So we will ask Brock about that coming up at 1 o'clock. Right now, though, our colleague Joe Fan at NBC Sports Northwest had a piece up on their website. It was addressing the foundational players that the Seahawks have. Who are they? And, I mean, so he listed six of them. Are those the only guys? Are those really, you know, guys worth building your foundation around, et cetera, et cetera? I'll just read the list here real quick, and we'll dig into some topics surrounding it. I'll go six through one. Six, Jaron Reed. Five, DK Metcalf. Four, Shaquille Griffin. Three, Tyler Lockett. Two, Bobby Wagner, and one, Russell Wilson. So those are six players that Joe identifies as their foundation. Now, maybe if you're making your own list, maybe you have, I don't know, eight guys. Maybe you only have four. I don't know. But we'll go with the question here with the number at six. Are those players and just those six players, is that enough of a foundation that the Seahawks have established to be building the team around? I mean, a couple of those guys are a little bit older. If you're talking about Bobby Wagner and Russell Wilson, a couple of them are younger, and we have all the draft picks too. I mean, how do you see that list, Jake, as a foundation?
I don't really see this as a strong foundation. I've always said this, and I've always looked at it this way, that Bobby Wagner and Russell Wilson are keystones. So if you talk about an arch and building an arch, you've got the keystone in the middle, and that's what holds everything up, you know, together. You remove that keystone and everything crumbles. To me, there's not, you know, a significant foundational pieces to this roster that you can really look at and build off of. I mean, you know, Tyler Lockett, I think, DK Metcalf, you know, those are really good pieces in your offense and things that you look at. But, you know, are you going to have a tremendous football team with those two receivers as part of your foundation? I think that those are things that you have to look at. Defensively, is Jaron Reed and Shaquille Griffin, you know, strong supporting foundational pieces around Bobby Wagner? I think those are all questions that we have. I would say Quandre Diggs is absolutely a foundational piece for this team right now in terms of the way you look at his contract. You know, he's got a contract all the way through 2023, I believe it is. So he's definitely a foundational piece to me. But I look at this list, guys, and it just really shows me that there really isn't a strong foundation outside of Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner. You've got good football players on your roster, don't get me wrong. Dwayne Brown, not a part of this list because as of right now, he's basically, you know, on a one-year basis after this year. So you don't know if you can necessarily put him as your foundation. But to me, it becomes really interesting in terms of how many guys, A, do you need, and B, do you think they have that right now? What do you guys think?
I mean, no offensive linemen, that's a big problem. I mean, we mentioned
absolutely
Dwayne Brown, but yeah, that's a huge problem.
Well, you're having a big
quarterback's
$35 million
I mean, dollar investment.
Yeah, I'm not sure why there would be any offensive linemen there when you've got your only returning offensive linemen are going to be Dwayne Brown, who I don't know how much longer he's going to be there. Certainly your strongest offensive lineman, but also one of your older players. Then you don't have Justin Britt. You don't have Jermaine Ifedi. I mean, I don't know that people would have classified these guys as like keystone pieces anyways, but they're gone now. You don't have DJ Fluker. So, I mean, yes, is it a bummer that you don't have any pieces there? Sure, but you have an entirely new group coming in. I think that
to me, it's more that they didn't have any offensive linemen as part of the foundation in the first place. I mean, maybe you could have considered Justin Britt a part of that the last couple of years. I think that's probably fair. But going forward, as we sit here now, I mean, you just said it. They've lost all kinds of guys. I mean, I would think foundational pieces tend to be in the trenches and probably defensively. I mean, you've got Bobby Wagner, but like, I wouldn't build around wide receivers. I'm glad, like you said, Jake, that we have them. I'm glad that DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are as great as they are. But if I'm building a team from scratch, I'm not sure that I want my foundational pieces to be wide receivers. I'd rather them be in the trenches.
Yeah, I would fully agree. And so my question now becomes to you guys is, are the Seahawks going about this the right way, or are they forced to be in a position where because of Bobby Wagner, because of Russell Wilson and their contracts, they are perpetually in this cycle of having to find one-year deals, 2-year deals, and you're seeing this perpetual cycle between guys and not enough true foundational pieces. I love this text on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line here from the 425 who says, how many active Seahawks have jerseys that are selling compared to the 2013 team. We need more jersey selling players. And if you just think about it in that perspective, how many guys are you going out and saying, I got to have that guy jersey? Not because you're, you know, a crazy fan, but because they're one of the best players in the league and you can't wait to buy that guy's jersey. 2013, there were a whole bunch of them. And why is that? Because they drafted extremely well.
Well, and I know jerseys are expensive, but that is a pretty good point, because when I walk into the stadium, depending on, you know, if I go through like a crowd to get there, I'm still seeing, you know, 31 jerseys. Occasional Richard Sherman jerseys, although since he's gone to San Francisco, that's changed. But it's really, it's Russell Wilson, it's Bobby Wagner, it's Tyler Lockett, and maybe some Chris Carson in there, and that's really it. So, that's a really interesting point. I think that what's worth mentioning is what might change your mind about that. If it's going to be LJ Collier, but if you have like a Marquise Blair on this list next year, if you have another guy stand out, does that change your mind? You know what I mean? I think that that goes back to the conversation, and this is for a separate day, that we were having about the pressure on this year and last year's draft class now to make up for a lot of misses, frankly.
Yeah, if Marquise Blair goes out there and dominates the way, or similarly to Cam Chancellor making big hits and changing the game that way, I would imagine that his number will come up on that list of highest jersey sellers. I think there's one more point here, too, that's interesting, is that Pete Carroll has this running philosophy, Stacey, and there's no running back. Like, Chris Carson isn't on this list. Should a running team have a running back to build around, or do you not need a specific guy? How does that work?
I don't think Pete Carroll, you know, it's tricky because you think about what he likes most versus what he says. And sometimes there's a discrepancy there, right? Like, he's talked about how how much he likes having different kinds of receivers, but the best receivers he's watched have always been these huge dudes, like DK Metcalf style guys, like Randy Moss. And you think, well, Tyler Lockett doesn't really fit into that. I think that with running backs, he always talks about wanting a rotation of guys to just keep going. But I feel like he'd actually like to have like a guy that's just really physical, doesn't get off the field. I mean, this isn't the best. I'll use a different example, but like a Reggie Bush, not the example I was going to use, but we'll keep the other one off the air. But he wants a guy that's ready to go and play all the time. And that could be Chris Carson. I think that if Chris Carson didn't land on the injured reserve in two of his last years here, you'd include him in that list, even in the final year of his deal, because Shaquille Griffin's in the same boat and he's on this list.
Absolutely. I mean, Chris Carson's the closest thing that they've had to Marshawn Lynch in the last 5 years. And you're right, he's been hurt. Some of that's kind of bad luck. But, yeah, he'd be on the list. I think you're spot on there if he hadn't gotten hurt. High school athletes in our region and across the nation had their sports seasons or even careers cut short by the COVID-19 pandemic. And 710 ESPN Seattle wants to recognize them. So, if you know of a local team or athlete impacted by the crisis, then use the hashtag 710 Hometown Heroes on your Twitter or Facebook to share their story and why they're your hometown hero. Again, hashtag 710 Hometown Heroes. All right, Brock Huard jumps in here next. We got all kinds of questions for the man. 710 ESPN Seattle.